Okay, we're on page Kuf Yud, Halacha Kuf Yud Aleph. Those who are learning Daf Yoimi, Masech Tehillim, this is something that we looked, that was studied not that long ago, only 2-3 weeks ago. What he discussed over here was mentioned. This is a Kabbalistic inyan, which today we don't know from this today. And that is, whenever you drink something, you're not supposed to drink right away. You're supposed to first pour out a drop. Why? Simply because there is a ruach raw that rests on the water. Shadim. Today we are of the opinion that shadim no longer exist. Since the time, they don't know, these things do not exist. That's what we assume today. But it used to be in ancient times, there's something called shadim. And when you have a cup of water, when you fill up water from a well, or from a natural source of water, it always happens that you take with you a shade, a demon, and the demon floats on the very top of the water. So it is a sakana for a person to drink a cup of water, or to drink any liquid for that matter, without first pouring a drop, a teeny drop of the liquid on the floor, into the sink, or somewhere. Because
pouring a drop of water back into the wine.
But that's called pogrom. That's an entirely different thing. I'll talk that about in a moment. That's a whole different thing. We'll come to in a few moments that. But let's just discuss this custom, which is mentioned in the Gemara, and it seems was done in the time of the Sefer Hasidim, 800 years ago, and that is, when you draw water from a well, it happens that on withdrawing the water, you also draw shadim, demons. And the demon floats on the very, very top of the water. Before you drink that water, you have to pour a small, teeny drop of water off onto the floor in order to remove that demon, that shade. And if you don't, it's a sakana. It's a sakana. The shade will come into your body, and who knows, you'll have all these spooky stories of the Dybbuk stories. Obviously, today, we don't know from this. You say this to someone, they'll take you to a psychiatrist. If you talk like this today, okay. Today we're not familiar. Today we're of the opinion that the Rambam says that Bizman has said there are no such thing as shadim. They're gone. There's no such thing as shadim. So all the Mepharshim, they ask a question: the Rambam, how could the Rambam say that Bizman has said there's no such thing as shadim when the Gemara is molei v'godosh, is heaping with mentions of shadim? So the answer is, until time of the Rambam, there was shadim. When the Rambam paskened, there are no more shadim. All the shadim had no choice but to follow the psak of the Rambam and to disappear. The Rambam doesn't disagree. I don't know what the Rambam says. I don't know. But the Rambam says there are no more shadim. And the way the Mepharshim really explained it is that you have to be on a Baal Madrega to be worthy that the shadim should come to you, should deal with you. In other words, dead meat attracts flies, right? A live person does not attract. So too, spirituality attracts shadim. Okay, think of the mushel. Dead meat. You have a dead creature, a dog, a dead dog. You see a dead dog, how many goes on around a dead dog, a dead horse, what it looks like? Okay, something that is dead attracts an enormous amount of flies and whatever you call these things, whatever they fly at. But alive, nothing, zero. Likewise, spirituality, true intense spirituality attracts shadim. Today, unfortunately, we're not very spiritual. And therefore, they don't bother. They're not interested in coming to us, attacking us, because today, relative to what was, the spirituality is very, very minor. So today, these are not issues at all. But at the time of the Gemara, there was this principle, there was something called Shadim. It was a very, very big inyan. It seems 800 years ago, there were still people that were very sensitive to these things. And therefore, the custom was that you do not take a cup of water to drink unless you first pour a teeny, teeny drop of the water onto the floor, into the garbage, or into some source, because on the top of the water, of a liquid that has been drawn from a well, there is a demon, and that demon must be removed. And the Gemara talks about, tells us a story where the Gemara relates a story where there was a water drawer who would remove the water, would remove the demons. Every day he would fill up the water and he would pour out a little bit of the water to remove the demons. And then he brings it into the city and everyone there is taking the cup of water and they do it themselves. And he says to himself, what a waste of time. I went and I poured out all of the shadim. When these people, they do it themselves anyway. It's not necessary for me to go and pour out the top of the water because the people anyway don't trust me and they'll do it themselves. Okay, so it was a very big Indian, it was a very big thing in ancient times. So here he mentions, when do you pour the water? Before you make the bracha or after you make the bracha? And this might be nogeh halacha l'maisa when it comes to what you're talking about being a kois pogel. Okay, we'll come to another thing which you mentioned, we'll see. Let's first see what it says in Kuf Yod page. Okay, about page Kuf Yod, halacha Kuf Yod Aleph. Hatsame lishtois mayim. One who's thirsty to drink water. Lo yivarech. Do not first make a bracha. Baruch atah Hashem elokeinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyah bidvaroi. And then pour the water to remove the shade. V'achar kach yishpech mehem. Ella, what's the correct procedure? First, before you make the bracha, first, ella shayfech mehem, you pour the water. V'achar kach, and then mevarech v'shayseh. Now, is this no geya halacha lemaisa? Yes, it is. Where is Nogei Halacha L'maisa? It's teaching you the first thing you have to be 100% ready to drink before you make a bracha. You have a can of soda, first open up the can before you make the bracha. Don't make the bracha and then twist off the cap or open the can. Your example, you have a kois pogum. We know that when you make kiddush, you're supposed to make kiddush on a fresh cup of wine. What happens if someone makes kiddush, they drink from the wine, and now you want to make kiddush. So you take the leftover wine, there's no more grape juice in the shul. The only grape juice is from this fellow who made kiddush and made a boy prayer guffin and sipped from the wine. You don't care that, you're not makbid on the germs for whatever reason. Maybe it's a relative of yours, maybe it's your child. You don't care about the germs. So you want to, it's the only wine left in the shul, so you want to take that leftover wine and you want to use it to make kiddush. So you take let's say you take a smaller cup, okay? It has to be full, left off, but let's say you take a smaller cup and you take the leftover and you pour it into a smaller cup of wine. There's still a problem. That wine is not fit for kiddush because that is called a kois pogum. Someone who has sipped from a cup of wine basically damages the wine. It's no longer respectable to use that wine for you to make kiddush. But you can repair it. How do you repair a kois pogum? You pour in a little fresh wine. If you, let's say the bottle is a drop of wine left in the bottle, not enough to pour a new cup. There's a little teeny drop of wine left in the container of grape juice. So I take that small amount and I pour it into this new cup. Magic. It's no longer called a kois pogum. You can repair. Pogum literally means damaged. You can
repair.
What?
Yeah,
b'dievet, I think yes. B'dievet water also, any liquid. So you're going to repair the damage.
How does that work exactly?
These are Kabbalistic idyonim. Chazal say if someone drank from the water, it's not fitting. But if you add more, then already it's okay. I mean,
you cannot change the cup?
No, changing the cup is not going to make a difference. It's the yayin. The yayin has been damaged. So here, what are you going to do? You're going to take the cup that someone has sipped from, you're going to pour into another cup. And then you're going to add a little bit of water or a little bit of wine. Drop more in order to repair the damage. And you're going to recite Kiddush. Kiddush, what is Kiddush Shabbos day? Me'ikar hadin, you don't have to say all those long psukim in the pasuk. And the start from Alkein Berach is also no good because it's the middle of the pasuk. All you really have to for Kiddush is to say, Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, Borei pri hagafen. That's all you have to do when you make Kiddush Shabbos day. And Yom Tov day, that's all you have to do. Everything else is just icing on the cake. And if you're going to add the icing, make sure it's kosher icing. Make sure you know what you're doing. Don't start from Al-Kein Berach as Yom HaShabbos Vayikadashayu. That is incorrect. It's the middle of the pasuk. You have to at least start with, if you're going to say that, you have to start with Zohor Es Yom HaShabbos Likadashay, Sheish Es Yomim Tavod V'chulu V'chulu. That's what you should do. Okay, so let's say you're going to do the bare minimum. You're just going to say Bar Priyagofen. And it's a Kois Pogum. So what do you learn from this halacha? Don't recite Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Borei Pri Hagafen and then pour water into the cup. First, pour the water into the cup, or pour wine into the cup to remove it from being a kodesh pagum, and then you recite the Borei Pri HaGafen. Similar to here, this halacha, which is not relevant to us today, is where they were makbid not to drink from a fresh cup of water that has been drawn from a well because of the danger that there may be shadim. They would pour out a teeny drop of water. Do not first prepare the water and then make the bracha. The bracha has to be recited oyver la'asiyasan, the moment before, the last possible moment before you engage in what the bracha was said for. Next, v'lo yishta mehem, next halacha. V'lo yishta mehem v'yitin l'talmidav el imkein shafach mehem. Let's say you sip from the cup of wine. And now, I want my student to also sip. Okay, you have a cup and you make a bracha and you sip. And now I give the student the same cup, not a different cup. You actually give him the cup. It's disgusting. Why is it disgusting? Because my germs, I have injected into this cup my germs. He doesn't want to drink this cup of wine which has my germ, which my mouth has touched. So the problem though is El Imkain, so what should you do? El Imkain, don't just give it to him and he's gonna be embarrassed. If I'm going to give it to him, he's going to be embarrassed. He's going to be forced to drink this cup of wine because of the pressure of a Rebbe to a Talmud. So what should the Rebbe do? Have some seichel. Now this is what they did in ancient times. Today this would not work because today we're too sophisticated. In ancient times they believed the primary germs of...
They knew about germs?
They certainly knew about germs. There's no question about it. There's no doubt about it. There are so many sources for this. What would they do? They believe the primary germs is the lip of the cup, not the fact that some of the juice has gone back inside. If I would sip the cup, my saliva makes contact with the lip of the cup.
But it also goes further down.
That's today. We're very sophisticated today, so therefore today this is not relevant. But in those days, it's very clear that what would be detestable in the eyes of someone else to take the cup and to drink on the cup from the same place where my lips touched. So what is the solution? The solution they would do is to clean it. How do you clean it? Not a very sophisticated way to clean it, is you would pour some of the liquid in the cup over the lip where my lips made contact with, and that would be enough to cleanse that surface.
Could be dealing with alcohol.
Yeah, but alcohol today, we don't consider it to be, unless you rub it nice and hard. And even rubbing the surface where my lips made contact does not, in our perception, does not take away the fact that I probably spread the germs, poisoned the entire cup of liquid. We're dealing in a different frame of mind. This is what where the hakpad was only on the lip of the cup where my saliva has made contact with. So therefore, if a person makes a bracha and is now going to give to someone else to drink from the very same cup, don't just hand him the cup, because that person will feel pressure to sip from the cup the way the cup is, and he'll be disgusted, nauseated. Instead, before you give it to him, pour some of the liquid in the cup over the lip of the cup where your mouth has made contact in his presence to show him that you've just cleansed that area of the utensil, and now it's safe. Okay, for us it's not safe, but for them it was safe. That's what v'lo yishteh mehem v'yitin l'talmidav ela imkein shafach mehem. You pour some liquid over the top of the cup where you put your lips to. Shema, maybe. Istinisu, maybe the student is an istinis. V'lo yishteh mehem v'yamus bat sama. All right, everybody, sorry. I don't know what this means over here, okay? Okay, this part, no, I'm sorry. No, it's not right. Now, what are we doing? Whatever this means, it means obviously there's a lot more to this Mamre Chazal that meets the eye. I do not know. We'll leave it with that. Let's go further. Again, this is something which I don't think in our day and age, our society, is very practical. But we'll see what he says. And you warned him. Your friend has committed a crime, and you have warned him, do not do this. Vishresaboy Ploini, so and so, Al Tase Kach Yoiser, don't do this again. Da, be aware, he's soivcha lilkois. If you do this again, you're gonna be punished. Velo Yishmailecha, he doesn't listen to you. The Ovar Avera. So what should you do? You should get up in shul and make an announcement. Tacher is a love rabim, hisrei sibo. I warned this person not to talk during davening. He doesn't listen. Everyone should know that he's a bal avera. As I told you, this is not going to work today. He does not listen to my warning. He seems to be saying over here is that in ancient times there was a sense of responsibility, where if someone did an avera, the first ones they would come and blame. Obviously, they would give musar to the one who did the avera, but that was not the end. They would come and blame the friends. How come you don't stop your friend from doing this avera? And a friend was held accountable in a very real way that we today cannot relate to at all. How could it be? This is your best friend or your neighbor, and he does this, and you're quiet? You let him get away with this? Today, mind your own business. No one is coming to challenge friends why someone is doing, friends and family, why a fellow is behaving in an improper way. That doesn't even enter our minds. Mind, everyone realizes you can't tell a person what to do. Mind your own business. But that's not the way they lived in ancient times. Ancient times, there was arvos. Kol Yisrael arevim zelozeh. If you give musar to a person, why are you behaving in this fashion? It's fair game to go to his neighbor and say, what's going on with him? How come you don't stop him? How do you allow this to happen? So you are under criticism. So you have a right, to clear your good name by getting up in the street, getting up in the shul and saying, my boys, I don't blame me for him. I did the best that I could. He doesn't want to listen to me. It's not my fault. Rabbi Mayeski told me, remember, he told me that when he was many, many years ago, he davened in a certain shul, it was a given that one parent can give musar to someone else's child. It was like it was obvious. If someone else's, you come to shul, everyone was there, they were together. If someone else's child is misbehaving, you can go over to him and give him musar. And you can even give him a patch. And it was, and the father would give you, and the father of that child would give you a yashar koach. Like we're all together. And then he said, it came the day when it happened, when someone, actually there was someone, a child misbehaving, and someone else basically said, gave the kid like a little fras, stop it. And for the first time, the father of that child said to this fellow, you don't go hit my child. Don't tell my child what to do. And there was a moment of silence. He told me the story, so he's not here today. Moment of silence where this was a crack. It was a turning point, a watershed moment of where, like, there's no more arvus. There's not one big happy family anymore in this shul. This shul, all yechidim who happened to come together for convenience to daven together. When that happened, when someone gave musar to someone else's child, and the parent of that child said to the fellow, how dare you? Don't go tell my child what to do. You have a problem. Come to me. Don't go on your own. It was the beginning of the end. It was a change in the whole outlook. Today, this is like obvious to us, right? Today you don't even look at someone else's child, right? They'll put you in jail for child abuse and who knows what. Today we live in a crazy world today. But this is not the way it used to be. It used to be there was a sense of responsibility for your chaverim, and you were suspect. If you have a friend that is not behaving on the other end of the world, who do they blame? They blame you, and rightfully so. And therefore, if a person did everything they possibly can do that this person should stop behaving in this not refined way, you have a right to clear your name. And how do you clear your name? You get up in shul and say, Rabbi Yisai, don't blame me for his behavior. I did everything that I can possibly do. I warned him, I begged him, I tried to stop him. He doesn't want to listen to me. So don't associate me with him. Today, this is bizarre to say such a halacha, but that's it just goes to show it was a different type of culture.
It was different. Even by Goyim. I remember 45 years ago, kid was coming back from school, and he started off with some girls next to where I live. So the father came out and
gave him a frask.
Gave him a slap. He came back in 15 minutes with his mother. Big black, you know.
Mother frask.
And she asked what happened. He said he started off with the girls. So the mother turns to the kid and says, did you start up with the girls? He shook his head and she gave him another.
Also in the frass.
She said, thank you.
Okay, it's a different world. It's a different... Today, what would happen? Today, they would kill it. They had a gun. Each one would shoot the next one. Right? There would be a... All right, next halacha. Halacha kuf yud gimel vim yuanu hoylam al tzadik plonika. This is something which, Rachman al-Istan, this is something which... Which I think is a bit more relevant. Vim yiranu ha'ilam al tzadik plani echad shabola nikwe echad raf. Rachman al lisan, we see a tzadik, a good person, suffer. Well, how could it be? How could a person suffer? What avera could this person possibly have done that he deserves to suffer such a tragedy? So how do you explain this? This is a tzadik v'raloi. Al tzadik plani echad shabola nikwe echad ra, toim alohem. The answer is ba'avoin hador nispas.
That's what you say, people pass away.
Young people die. The Rachman Lutzton is that shat tzadikin. This is a chazal, which is something which is very, very hard to understand. You have the only way to come on to understand this in Muna Pshuta. Shat tzadikim nisposim ba'avoin hador. Tzadikim are taken for the sin of the generation. What does that mean? No one knows what this means. Shenemar. We find this by Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu was killed in battle. Paro Necho and his army shot 300 arrows into his body. What? Not Tzidkiyahu. I'm sorry. Not Tzidkiyahu. Yoshiyahu. I'm sorry. Yoshiyahu. What did Yoshiyahu could have possibly done? Yoshiyahu was a tzaddik yisoid olam. He brought about the greatest Baal Teshuvah movement in the history of the Jewish people. He did sin, okay? We can't say he was totally free from sin. He did not listen to the warning of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu Hanavi told him to allow Paro Necho to pass through Eretz Yisrael on his way to Karkamish to go to war with Melech Ashur. He did not obey the command of the Navi. However, it does not appear that he deserved such a fate. Even though he did not obey, there's more information that we have to be aware of. He did not deserve such a horrible demise that his body should be perforated with 300 arrows. 300. The number, we just learned this morning, 300. Esav came with 400 men. And here there were 300 arrows. What's the significance? 300 is always a hyperbole of spirituality. 400 is always Gashmi. So Esav came. Esav is Kula Gashmi, 400 men. When Yoshiyahu was killed in war, 300 arrows. His death was a spiritual death. He died al Kiddush Hashem to a degree. And it says over here, Shenemar, Ruach HaPeinu, the spirit of our nostrils, Mashiach Hashem. Nilkad, he was captured. Bishchi soysam in their destruction, and we understand this pasuk to mean bishchi soysam not in the destruction, the hashchasa of the enemy, but in the hashchasa of the Jewish people, and hashchasa means in their sins. The chatoim, the hashchasa of the Jewish people, has caused Rachmana Litzlan that the tzaddik Yoshiyahu, who was the Mashiach Hashem, who could have been the Mashiach Hashem, his life was taken prematurely. He died prematurely. Okay. Kuf Yudalit. Now this is...
Don't we say that when a tzaddik died, it brings kapara to the
world? Yes, Misa Tzaddikim bring kapara to the world. That's Shabbos Kodesh, is the yard site of Nadav Avihu. Hu asher diber Hashem b'kroivai ekodesh. That Nadav Avihu, they died on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and Moshe Rabbeinu said to Aaron that their Misa was a kapara. Was part of the whole Mishkan was a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. And part of that kapara demanded that Tzadikim Rachman al-Islam die. We have no idea what this means. We're just saying words. No clue what this means. And Moshe said to Aaron, really it should have been us. The ones who should have died in order to be chaper for the Chet HaEgel on the day of the Hakamas HaMishkan should have been Moshe the Aaron. And yet who died instead of us? Nadav v'Avihu. So it should be a nechama to you how great they were, that they were are even greater than us. Now, how is that a nechama? Beats me. I don't know. We don't understand these things.
What about the Rashi about the Eish Zara and they're overstating their boundary? With, I mean, there was the whole idea that they're doing something.
But the aver that they have done does not warrant such a punishment. That's obviously this chait. But the chait the punishment does not match the chait, and therefore that's why you need to come on to emuna tzaddik v'ra'alai, and that is the yisod of the Holocaust. People who tell you about the chatoim of the dar leading up to the Holocaust, no one is denying that there were very serious chatoim in the generation leading up to the Holocaust. You can't rewrite history, deny the facts. So what? The Chorban does not match the crime. No way. So anyone that will say that we deserve that the Holocaust, you know why there was a Holocaust? Because of, they'll give you a long laundry list of all the problems going on in Klal Yisrael. You can argue it's not true. And even if you want to say, okay, you have evidence, you want to say they were terrible averos, so what? Is the punishment of the Holocaust match the chatoyim, the horrors? No way, Jose. And that is why there's always chet. You're right. You're always going to find Yoshio had chatoyim, Nadav Avihu had chatoyim. They give a long laundry list of chatoyim of Nadav Avihu. But so what? To die on the day of the Hakamas HaMishkan, on this holy day, and the collateral damage that Aaron should have to suffer, such a tragedy, it does not add up. And therefore, you have no choice but to live with what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Hareini no eskevoidecha, I need to understand Tzadik v'Ra'aloi, and Hashem says to Moshe, you'll never understand it. V'ro'isa es achorai, ufonai lo yera'u, there is no answer. The only thing you can use in this world to survive is emuna peshuta. It's a hard pill to swallow. It's a very hard, it's an easy, it's a cop-out. A cop-out to say there's a reason. Oh, you know why the Holocaust happened? Because of this. You know why? Another reason? Because of this. Another, there are 13 reasons why they died. And then they give 13 reasons why another. That's right, there are 13 chaton that they've done. But it does not explain why they die. To go connect the dots and say the reason why they died is because they did these 13 sins. That's a cop-out. They've done 13 averos. Okay, fine. That deserves they should die on this day, at this time, and cause the enormous tsar to Aaron for the rest of his life in the Klal Yisrael? No, that does not match up. And that's a lesson in all suffering, that the end of the day, you always need to come on to emuna peshuta. Today, there's a floodgate of inspirational speakers and publications about emuna. It's not real. How many things are coming out every single day? People are publishing svarim and stories about emuna. You never had something like this in the history of Klal Yisrael. Such an emphasis today on dealing with matters of emuna. And some techniques we discussed, some techniques are controversial, and some techniques are interesting. Let's go further.
I heard something about this Tzadik v'ra'alo, Tovlo. It said that Rasha, that is Tovlo, it says there's something good in this world. Hashem is going to give him his reward here, not to have any credit for the Olam Haba. And Tzadik, is something wrong, Hashem is going to punish him.
That's what it says in Chazal. That's what it says in the Gemara. But if you really think about it, like we said, it doesn't add up. These are things that we use in Emuna to help us. But at the end of the day, what's the proof to this? It's all very good to say these things to someone else. Someone else is suffering terrible tragedy, Rachmana Litzlan. So what do you say to them? Must be that you've done an avera you're not aware of, or probably you're a Gilgal, a Gilgal from a 500 years ago, and you're making tikkun, and you go and you give a long speech, and you legitimize, you justify that person's suffering. And then what happens, Rachmana Litzlan Lo Yaleinu, when the person himself suffers exactly that same fate? So take out the tape recorder, take out the tape recorder, and play back the inspirational speech that you won a Nobel Prize for, okay, or the book that you won the Pulitzer Prize for, giving the chama for someone else, and read it back to yourself. And guess what? You take all the speech and you throw it in the garbage. Inspirational speech, it doesn't make a dent in yourself. It's all good and fine for someone else.
Yes.
For someone else. That's how you'll be able to justify Hashem's midas hadin for yenim. And when it comes to yourself, take the same speech, the same words, play back the tape recorder. Read your own book. The book that you published and you received the most beautiful praise. Read it back to yourself. Throw it in the garbage. It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? It doesn't work. Because the bottom line is Emuna, that's the only thing when it comes to the end of the day. That's the only thing. Let's go further. Kuf Yudalid. Now this is an incredible halacha. This is based halacha. Hameshana minigri shaynim kimoy piyutim ukroivets. Someone is meshana the minig of the rishaynim of the old minhagim, like the recital of piyutim ukroivets. Ukroivets is rashi teivais kahal rina. I'm sorry. Kohol sound rina song vishua salvation. Bikahal in the assembly of tzadikim, called Rina Vishua, Bikahal in the tents, Beohale tzadikim. That's called the Krovetz. Okay, Krovetz is another word for. Now, what does it really stand for? That's a very nice Rosh Hashanah, but that's not the real pshat. It's like Teku. Teku stands for Tishbi Yitaretz Kushyos Ve'Abayos. Tishbi, who's Tishbi? Who ever heard of Tishbi? Eliyahu HaTishbi. He will answer all the difficulties. That's a very nice drush, but it's not what Teku means. Teku means let the question stand.
Yes.
It just means it's just the opposite. Tishbi, Yitaritz, he'll come and give us the answer. Who says we want an answer? It's not what Teku means. Teku means let the question stand. The question is something in life to walking away with the question.
So,
you have a difficulty? That's right. Let the question remain a question. Adarabba. Don't look for a cop-out. It's a cop-out to say, Tish be yitaretz kushis yabais. Everything has to have an answer. Everything has to answer. There's a very big criticism of Hasidim, and that is, it's an easy way out of life. The Rebbe tells you who to marry. The Rebbe tells you what to eat. The Rebbe tells you what kind of job to have. It's like communism. A Litvisha approach, the Musar approach of the Shol Salanter is take responsibility for your own life. Take possession for your own life. What?
People prefer, that's why...
Exactly, that's why Hasidus for the masses. That's why it's spread like fire. Hasidus spread like fire because Hasidus is for the common man, for the masses. The Musar movement was never popular. Yechidim Shab Yechidim is because it's discipline, it's hard work, and it means you got to get up and take responsibility for yourself. And only Yechidim, that's why Hasidus is very popular then. The Gra was Eish Lahava. To put it in place, to give, it was much worse than it is now. Today, Hasidim are really Litvak. Everyone today is just a big, big mix. Everyone today in this room is a mix of both. Everyone today everyone has taken the elements, the best of both worlds. But it wasn't like that. In ancient times, if the Avshol Slanta was living in our generation, you would not even know, you would think he's a different religion. We wouldn't relate to him. Everything he did was so strange to us. We couldn't even deal with him. We would push him away. We would think he's an extremist. The Gra also, because people of Musar, you can't even imagine what the real Baal Musar is like. What kind of lifestyle a real Baal Musar? Everyone in this room is a chassid. Everyone over here is no question about it. But no one's a chus like from the time of the Baal Shem Tov. No one over here is doing somersaults when they're davening. No one over here is every chus today. Some of the biggest talmidei chachamim today are chassidim. They put out the mesifta. I mean, so today we're living in a world, a very complicated world. But how do we get into this by Rabbi Yisai? So the piyutim that are said, the minute they say piyutim and the curse, so that's how we got this. So let's go back one more step. The very, very important thing. One more step. What's the real meaning of teku? Teku means let the question stand. What do we do? That's a musar approach. That's a very powerful approach of a litvak. Let this question stand. It bothers you. No one likes to walk around on the streets with a question. Everything has to be easy. Press the easy button. Everything has to be good. So what do we like to do? We like to corrupt what it says. Let the question stand. No, there's no question. Tishbi yitareitz kushiyos ve'abayis. There's an answer. Eliyahu Navi is around the corner. He'll give us an answer. It's a cop-out. That's the Hasidish approach, to take from teku to tishbi yitareitz. So likewise, what is the real meaning of a kreivetz? It's from the word korav. It's close. Close to what? It's close to the beginning of the Shmona Esrei. The first three, close to Baruch, it comes from the word korav. I forgot already. Korav means it's near. It's near near the beginning of the bracha. When do you say a kreivetz? You make a bracha. What? It's just like a suffix. The shorish of a kreivetz is korav. It is near what? It's near Hashem's name. You say it right before you say Baruch, and before you say Baruch Ato Hashem, you recite a kreivetz. On Purim is popular to Baruch Hashem. I came back. Is you recite kreivetz during Chazaras Hashatz? The Shliach Tzibur, he recites most of the bracha. And right before he says Baruch Ato Hashem Choinein Hadoas, you say a few lines of Kreivetz. Why is it called a Kreivetz? It's close to Hashem's name. Right before you say Baruch Ato Hashem, something along those lines. The word, it's close to the end. Close. It comes from that expression. So what do? We don't like to say that. So we make a little thing. We have it. We have a little Hasid Shavar. It's Koil Rina of Yeshua Baale Tzadikim. That's a little bit of a, it's a nice little cute little thing, but it's not the real meaning of the word Kreivetz. Is this Yoitzreis? What's Yoitzreis? Yoitzreis is this piyutim that you say in the bracha of Yoitzer or Uvorei Choshech. Then there. What? No, Yoitzer or Nusach Ashkenaz, during Shachris, in the first bracha. In the first bracha of Birchas Kriya Shema, you say Yoitzer Or. If you say a piyut in Yoitzer Or, that's called a Yoitzer, Yoitzreis. Yes. Today, we don't do that. Today, we take what was originally said in the bracha of Yoitzer Or, and we recite it after Shemona Esrei. Because we don't want to be mafsik. Because we don't concentrate. So we're not going to concentrate. It'll be a hefsik, so we say it after Shemona. But the reason why it's called a Yoitzer is because it's said in the bracha of Yoitzer Or. What other examples do we have? Maravas. It's Mariv Aravim. Mariv Aravim. It relates to the bracha. The bracha, each of these type of piyutim are called by a certain name to define where in the davening it is said. A kreivetz comes from the word korav. I don't remember what the element of kar, but it's near a certain portion of the bracha. It could be near the end of the bracha when you recite Hashem's name, something along those lines. In any event, people would say piyutim ukreivetz shehinigu loymar ein. For he gives examples ein tzur, is someone who changes the piyut, and he says the piyut called ein tzur. I don't know what this is. Obviously, it was a very famous piyut. People prefer to say this instead of reciting the piyut from the Kalir. The Kalir, he composed a beautiful piyut called the Kreivetz of the word of the Kalir, and people said, we don't understand what this says, it's too esoteric, we don't understand. So you know what? let's say something simple which everyone can understand, and let's recite the piyut called Ein Tzur. And the Zeh HaMinog. And the previous minig in the Beis HaKnesses was to say the piyut of the Kalir. And now the newcomers, they decide no more. We're now going to exchange it for something different. The Omar Kroivets Acheros. Someone does this, he is playing with fire. Oiver Mishum Al Tasig Gvul Oilam Asher Osu Avoisecha. Another pasuk in the Torah says, Lo Sasig, do not overstep Gvul Reacha, the boundary of your friend, Asher Gavlu Rishonim, which the earlier people have established. Any minog that has been established by the Rishonim, by your predecessors, you have no, and has been accepted and has been established, you have no right to trespass, meaning to violate and to remove. It's not a good thing to play around with minhagim. The letters of minog are the same letters of gehenim. Gehenim, which Chazal said, you play with a minog, you're putting yourself in jeopardy of gehenim. Yeah.
Some people don't say that, like Ashkenaz.
Today today it's very rare to say the piyutim in the davening itself. But most people today who even do say piyutim yoytzrois do not say it in the davening itself for one very simple reason. In general, it's controversial to add piyutim into davening. It might be considered to be a hefsek, you're saying Hashem's name, yoytzer or uvarei choyshech. And you're not going to conclude the bracha until the very end of Yoitzer HaMe'oros. And in the middle, you have a conversation. How are you allowed to go add things into the Nusach HaBracha that were not established by Chazal? So how are you allowed to do that? So the answer is, well, it's all part of the purpose of davening. Now that may have been a good answer years ago where people knew what they were saying. They appreciated the piyutim. They knew the translation and had meaning to them, and their minds did not wander. Today, if someone's going to start saying Yoitzrois in the middle of the bracha, Yoitzor v'Yechoshach, and start reciting 5 pages of Yoitzrois, which is Japanese, Chinese, Portuguese to him, his mind will be wandering, and his lips are going to be moving. He doesn't know what in the world he's saying, and who knows what else it will lead to. Today, it will certainly be considered a hefsek in the middle of the bracha of Yoitzor. And that is why we have no choice. If we do recite the Yoitzrois to preserve the minog, and there are people that still appreciate the Yoitzrois, and today we live in a new generation where there are indeed sefarim, perushim that have come out that break open wide the beauty of these piyutim. If you spend time with Purim to appreciate, it's a whole different davening. You want to spend the time to learn what these things are all about. Then, so we say it after davening. We say it after. We finish the Shemona Esher, where there no longer will be a halachic challenge to recite it, but the youth say the middle of davening. Here he's discussing.
The people, you're saying that the people who originally said it didn't know that they're not supposed to say the middle of Shemona Esher.
No, when I was saying Adarabba, if you know what it means and you appreciate what it means, it's not called a hefsek. It's not called today because we're weak-minded. Miskadnu Hadoros, and we have on our minds a lot of other things, and we have a very hard time concentrating on the basics. To burden the average person with saying a yoitzer in the middle of davening will be considered to be a very significant hefsek. So we don't say the middle of davening, we say when davening is over. He's not discussing over here, he's discussing the principle is do not tamper with a minok. There was a famous story, I forgot, one of the Gedolei Yisrael. One of the Gedolei of the previous generation, this is always mentioned in all the Minhagim Sarm, that he changed the Nigunim on the Yamim. Who is it? One of the biggest Gedolei Yisrael. He decided to change one of the Nigunim on the Yamim Noiraim. He became a new Rav. And his child died. His daughter died. And he attributed the death of his daughter, the tragedy, to the fact that he changed the Nigun for a certain piyut on the Yamim Noiraim, that he tampered with the minhag, the ancient, the minhag Yisrael. And I mean, today, such a thing you can never say, no one knows nothing today. Okay, but this was dealing with a different generation, different caliber of people, and he said this, and it's always cited in all of these sefarim that talk about do not tamper with minhagim. they always cite this story from whoever this person was, not the tamper. When do we have this comes to play? It comes to play Purim. Many people do not want to bang when you bang Klap Haman. They're tired of this. They're tired of banging so much, every single Haman to bang. There are elderly people in shul, people are fasting, people are annoyed. Noise pollution. And Chazal never had in mind cap guns and electronic devices and high-tech devices that you buy in Judaica stores, which make sounds you've never heard before. So maybe it's a good idea that we should be mevatel the bang of Haman. And the answer is we don't. Why not? Because the Ramah says, don't play games. Don't tamper with Minog Yisrael. And that's why many Rabbanim, although they're very tempted to stop the banging, at least the whole Megillah, maybe just do the banging once or twice, they just can't do it. They just feel this resistance because it's not worth it to tamper with the Minog Yisrael. Ad Kedei Kahu, and to stop now in a moment, Mo'os Chitim. Okay, so today, what do we do today? Today, every shul has a campaign we're going to discuss in a few moments. This is Mo'os Chitim. Originally, what did you give? What did you do? You gave Aniyim wheat. Today, no one is giving poor people wheat. You're giving poor people money, cash. So there is a whole collection of teshuvos. I mean, heavy duty stuff that says even today you should give them wheat. Because this is the Minog Yisrael. And don't tamper with Minog Yisrael. Obviously, this lost, okay, this approach, but it's with great difficulty and a very heavy heart that this ancient minhag, which goes back to the time of the Gemara, this ancient minhag of Mo'os Chitim is really not done anymore. It's minhagim evolve. Most giving wheat to poor people is one of the oldest minhagim in Klal Yisrael, and sad that it's not done. It can't be done because no one today is interested in wheat, in kernels of in wheat, and they can go grind it themselves. This doesn't exist today, right? The Mitzvah doesn't exist, but it's something which many of the commentators have taken note of. That you know we have over here this principle in Yados of Al-Loisasig Givul Re'acha Asher Gavlu Rishonim. The sanctity of Jewish custom. The sanctity of Jewish custom. And it's something that we don't like to tamper with at any cost. And yet this is a casualty. They give money. That's not the Tekan. Okay, we'll stop. We're going to talk about that after the break. What? Look, the story. The story, the joke is they come to shul and they have a question. We say, Avarachamim the Shabbos. So the fight breaks out. This camp says we do, this does not. So they ask the Shabbos, what is the minhag of the shul? So he says, the minhag of the shul is the fight. That's the minhag. The minhag is not to do and not to do. The minhag is the fight.
Not only
Al-Kain Baruch Hashem,
Friday night,
it's not Jom HaShem. Yeah, right, right, that's correct. Middle of the Pasuk, that's correct, correct. That's correct, correct, correct.
You know what always bothered me about the early thing you're talking about, Buna HaShem and all, you know, when Yom Kippur, when they